broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Bill Hendry.
Then you got this punk-ass Billy Payne who goes on TV yesterday. Like, first of all, he ain't told his kids.
As Greg is, frequently gets in with a group of people that...
Now, the president, with all the vast nuclear experience...
Congressman Stupak, you are one big piece of
human. It sounds racist to me.
World famous Phil Hendry show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch through the looking glass. And like that, every night, man. You know, on this radio show, more than any other radio show in the history of the world, we do not countenance horse dung. We do not countenance any attempt at, well, you know, let's just, for the sake of argument, let's just go ahead and say that this and that. No. We don't do anything for the sake of argument here, okay? We don't do anything for the sake of, well, ideologically, we, you know, I don't know about anybody else. But let me put it to you as clearly as I possibly can. On this show, when we do whatever we do, the satire that we do, you know, and the radio that we do is all designed for one thing and one thing only. Let's cut right through the horse dung and let's get right to the meat of the matter. How do people feel about things? Like in that last segment we just did there with Brad Rifkin. Man, wife, dead, huh? Murder? What? What do you think? Huh? Is he going to actually go? Does anybody go up for murder these days? Does anyone in the state of California, for instance, and I know this happened in Mexico, and I don't know what they do in Mexico, but does anybody really go up, I mean, up in smoke for murder these days, other than a couple of states? Here in California, for instance, we've got Richard Ramirez is still sitting on death row. And so what other dance are we going to be doing here? What other excuse are they going to make for the taking of a human life? What other kind of fancy little two-step so that somebody someplace feels better about themselves are we going to do so some guy gets off of a murder rap? I don't know. But because it is Mexico, maybe, I don't know.
What do they do down there? Do they even have a death penalty or anything like that?
Yeah. I don't know if they do. I don't. Mexico, that's a very good question. I have no idea.
Yeah, what do you think it is?
Yeah, I'll tell you one thing. If an electric chair... Because of the way the bad maintenance, you know.
If they have an electric chair, they don't maintain it?
Well, does it work?
Well, if they got an electric chair, maybe they use it. And if they use it, I guess it works. I don't know.
Well, about the maintenance.
Let me tell you something, man. They got good maintenance down there. It just depends on whether you're in the maintenance union, you know. Whether you're in the restaurant union, whether you're in the hotel workers union. All right, 877-876-PHIL. Our website, philhendryshow.com. If you head over there. You can see our live streaming video and audio every single solitary stinking day. And tomorrow night at 6 o'clock, our special video cast, our sixth day video cast, How to Drink Tequila.
I heard about that, man.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to do tomorrow night on our special video cast at 6 o'clock Pacific, because we've had so many people who've been, you know, from time to time we get questions about tequila. Now, I don't claim to be an expert, but I also know that you don't slam shots like some frat brother who wants to wake up with his face in a puddle of vomit, especially after, say, 12, 18 hours where it's begun to kind of congeal around your face. And
oh, man.
Well, you know, there is a way to drink tequila, and I happen to like it. It's the only distilled liquor that I drink. It's the only liquor that I drink, as a matter of fact. I don't drink anything anymore other than tequila. I don't drink beer. I don't drink wine. I hate wine. I've never enjoyed wine. I can't stand the taste of it. I can't stand the smell of it. I don't like wine, you know.
A lot of people drink wine, though, don't they?
A lot of people drink wine. A lot of guys, like, I guess guys drink wine. I think guys drink wine because women drink wine. Oh, I don't know. I shouldn't say that.
Well, you think it's gay?
I didn't say gay, no.
You're talking about you drinking wine being gay, you know.
I didn't say it's gay, I just don't drink wine. I don't drink vodka, I can't stand the smell or the taste of that. I used to drink a little whiskey, I used to drink Irish whiskey like Bushmills, and in fact, way back, I used to do the old Boilermakers, you know.
Man.
Well, sure. You take that shot glass of whiskey, you drop it into a beer, just like some bum sitting in a bar. I used to do all that stuff. And then I'd go over and play a game of shuffleboard against some 80-year-old guy, and he'd kick my ass, and I'd lose all my money. So that, you know, that was my life. But I don't do any of that anymore, man, and I barely even drink anymore. I mean, tomorrow night when we do our video cast of how to drink tequila will be the first time I've had a drink since, well, I know, I had a couple of drinks when we went out to dinner in New York 2 weeks ago.
Well, yeah, but you got a drink on account of being with the, and entertain everybody on a business trip and everything.
Yeah, that's what you got to do.
You don't have to drink if you're on a business trip.
Well, if you're out with a radio station business trip, you know, you got to have drink to show people a good time.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, you know, but you, I'm going to be convivial. So I was there with some folks. Yeah, but that's the last time. I guess that was 3 weeks ago, and I hadn't had anything to drink before that for months. So tomorrow night, we're going to do a solid hour of tequila drinking on our video cast, and it's going to be a wicked, wicked thing.
But are you going to throw up and everything?
No, I'm not going to throw up, man, because that's why I'm doing the thing, to show people how to be a civilized human being.
Yeah, I mean, you could probably drink a lot of tequila and not throw up, right?
I can drink a whole bottle of Don Julio Blanco and not throw up. No.
You're kidding. That's got to be some kind of a record or something.
Are you nuts, man? Why is that a record?
Who's ever drank a bottle of tequila and not, you know, puked it up, you know?
Oh, man.
Are you kidding me or something? Are you in a, you really are a retard, aren't you?
No, but really.
Look, it's not about whether you're drinking a whole bottle. It's got nothing to do with any of that. It's about how you sit and you sip. Tequila, first of all, is supposed to be drunk like brandy. You don't slam shots. Secondly, you want to drink good tequila. And if you're going to drink bad tequila, that's what you want to drink in your margaritas. These people that go out and they buy all this really expensive tequila to make margaritas, God, talk about throwing good money after bad. If you got some rot gut like Jose Cuervo, yeah, I know. Everybody's telling me, no, Phil, you don't understand. Jose Cuervo's really stepped it up. Have they really? Their Añejo still tastes like, tastes like anything that I want to drink. I'll put it that as mildly as I can. I ain't going to drink it. I'm going to drink Añejo, drink the Don Julio. And that Trace Generation, get out of here with that. All of that is packaging. Do you understand, people? Don't be impressed by packaging. Trace Generaciones, and even that 1942 Don Julio, and all of those companies that put a lot of money into the packaging. They've got really ornate bottles. They've got wooden boxes. They've got leather clasps. It's like you're, oh my God, you think you're digging up the lost treasure of the conquistadors or something. So you're spending $50 for a bottle of tequila that isn't all that special at all, man. It's a bottle of Reposado. Trace Generaciones Reposado, I wouldn't give that to a cat, man. And every cat I've ever had is a tequila-drinking cat.
Really?
No, not really. But the fact is, when you see all that packaging, run, brother. Don't walk, run. And that jazz with the cactus, get out of here with that. You take a really simple package. Don Julio's fantastic. Now, that 1942 Don Julio, that's Añejo. They got $120 for a bottle of that. You can get a bottle of Añejo for $60. Why are you spending $120? Because it's in a wooden box, and it's in that big, long bottle. That's not tequila from 42. They're just simply celebrating the anniversary of the 1942 founding of the distillery.
Oh! Well, you lied to me.
I didn't lie, man. You told me it was from 42.
I never said it was from 42. Never.
You said I made that.
No, I didn't. I said that's when the distillery was founded, and that's why they call it 1942 Don Julio Añejo. You idiot. I didn't say anything like that.
Well, how come they spent $120?
Because of the packaging, man. It comes in a big freaking box. It's like it's in a coffin.
Yeah, a big green coffin.
That's exactly what it looks like. I wouldn't spend $120 for that. And to be perfectly honest with you, now that Seagram's has bought Don Julio, I don't know how much longer I'm going to be drinking that stuff. I want to know what the Don Julio family has gone back to Mexico and they've started another distillery, and I want to find out what they're doing. Because I just don't have very high hopes for Seagram's owning Don Julio Tequila. I don't give a crap. And, you know...
Yeah, but you drive a Jaguar, and they got botted by Ford.
Hey, but can I ask you something?
Yeah.
What do you mean, botted?
Yeah, you did that on Drankton, too.
I don't know.
You did. You said, are you going to drink the tequila, and you botted it? Yeah, well, you're right. I did. I bought a Jaguar, and they're owned by Ford. But you know what? I like Ford. I don't like Seagrams. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back with Tiger Woods and his Masters return. It sets a cable TV ratings record. Meanwhile, he's like in third or fourth or fifth place. Let's see who's leading the Masters board when we come back. World famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
Phil, welcome back. Coming up next hour, Doug Danger is going to join us, and another celebrity in the news, as you know, Charlie Sheen, and the problems he's had. He's leaving the TV show Two and a Half Men. Doug Danger from the Orange County Courier is going to talk to us about that. The first round of the Masters Tournament was the most watched golf broadcast in cable television history. The first round, that would have been Thursday. The most watched golf broadcast in cable television history. Is that amazing? ESPN's coverage of the event at Augusta National Golf Club in Augusta was seen by an average of 4.94 million viewers. You know what? Now that I mention that, most watched cable television broadcast, no, that isn't amazing. The most watched television broadcast, that would be amazing. Cable, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it's not that many people.
No, it's not. 5 million, big wow. Anyway, Mason Levinson, the guy who wrote this for Bloomberg, I understand what you're going for, Mason, but 5 million viewers, that's not going to buy you tap water on a network. On ABC or NBC, they'd be jumping out of windows if they had 5 million viewers for a Masters. But they start off with the opening rounds of Thursday and Friday. But how significant is that, really? I guess it means that because people are working and people are in the midst of a workday, in the midst of a school day, in the midst of a family day, of the business of life on Thursdays and Fridays, that they were able to get 5 million people to stop down long enough to watch a golf tournament is a record. 5 million people to watch a golf tournament in the middle of the day is a lot of people. I wonder how many people they would have had, though, had that been on CBS, NBC, or ABC, meaning an over-the-air network. We'll find out tomorrow. Round three, and then Sunday, round four, weekend days, watch out. This is based on preliminary figures that the Walt Disney Corporation was sniffing. No, the preliminary figures that Walt Disney said today at a news release. Now, Walt Disney, of course, owns ESPN, and so would they lie? Yes, they would. No, they wouldn't lie, because anybody can get the numbers, but they'll spin them the way they want to spin them. That's more than the previous record of 4.76 million viewers who watched Woods beat Rocco Mediate in the U.S. Open playoff in 2008. So that puts to a, I won't call it a lie, but it puts to a misconception and a bad read what Brian Kilmeade said the other morning on Fox when he said that Tiger Woods, if he does well, this is going to be the biggest, this will be bigger than the Olympics. He says it's going to be one of the biggest sports stories of the 20th century. And now here we are on Friday, right? And we've seen the commercial, which was badly done, and everyone knows, and probably even Tiger is thinking, good, can I somebody give me a break here? And we listen to all the horse dung, and the girl that called him out, she's not going to get any money from him. Now she's going to do some porno shoot. And the whole thing is sort of just dissolving into one big smelly puddle of pig dung. No, this ain't the biggest story since the Olympics, Kilmeade. Killjoy.
You're just mad at him on account of you were supposed to be on Red Eye. And then
will you shut up? It ain't the biggest story since the Olympics. It's a big story. It's a big story because he got out of that marriage, relatively intact. I say get out of the marriage. He's trying to save his marriage, but he's relatively intact. No real serious lasting scars, no amputations. But he'll know in the future, you don't mess this woman that you married, Woods. I guess you didn't know her, did you, huh? You thought she was just a pretty face. You're going to have about 19 kids with her, and you're going to go out and you're going to do whatever you're going to do, huh? You didn't know that Swedish chick, man. She'll take a machete, friend. You won't even know what hit you. You'll be sitting there in one of those encounter groups with John Wayne Bobbitt and the rest of those poor slobs. Isn't that just like a woman? You think you know her, and you think you know her, and you just all you got to do, man, is turn the wrong way with her. Just do something wrong, say something wrong, look at her the wrong way, and the next thing you know, you've got one of those gardening machetes just right there in the neck. Yesterday's play was seen in 4% of U.S. households, a 47% increase over last year's comparable level. All right, well, what does that mean? You know, what they do in broadcasting now with the 47% uptick and the 22% uptick, well, 47%, and we're talking about 4% of U.S. households. So what is that, like another percent? So I don't think these numbers are all that impressive. Round two is underway today with ESPN scheduled to provide. In other words, what I'm saying is it's not going to be the record-breaking television moment of the century as it was so described by Brian Kilbuzz. Anyway, Woods, who took time away from the game while undergoing inpatient therapy, shock therapy, insulin shock, and every other kind of head shrinking, and he was locked in a cage with a bunch of guys babbling following a November 27th car accident and his admission of marital affairs, as if this is the worst thing that's ever happened in the history of the world. Look what this guy had to go through to get rehabilitated. This guy had a whole bunch of girlfriends, right? Which most cats who are very, very famous are going to have a lot of girlfriends. I'm reading Greg Gutfeld's book, and Greg, it's a great book, and we're going to have Greg on. And he makes a really good point in the book. He was talking about something else, but men with money... Oh, he was talking about Einstein. Albert Einstein had many, many mistresses. He was married, but he had a lot of mistresses. And they said, well, you know, brilliance, something about his sexuality and his, no, don't you understand? Brilliant men generally have status, and women like status. That's what we were talking about the other day on the show. Women are attracted to men with status. Women are attracted to men with status because men with status they perceive as having a little bit of power. And men who have a little bit of power are men who can protect them, and so it goes hand in hand with nesting, and women are attracted to that. Albert Einstein, with that fuzzy fright wig of his and that whacked out looking kisser of his, he had 8 different women. It isn't because the guy's got a sex problem. It isn't because he's got a sex addiction. It isn't because Tiger Woods has got a sex addiction. Tiger Woods is famous, he's rich, and there's all kinds of hot-looking chicks throwing themselves at him, and that's what men do. And I'm going to tell you something, we're in very dangerous territory, much more dangerous territory than a man who cheats on his wife. It is far more dangerous to say to that man, you're sick. That's wrong. You can say to him, listen, why don't you man up and you're married to a woman, but to say that he is sick is to deny the very nature of men. That's just all there is to it. And you've heard it said, and women, I don't believe it. See, women are always trying to get us to live a different way. It's kind of like men always trying to get women to be sexually like us. Men are always trying to get women to be sexually coquettish. Men are always trying to get women to be sexy like a stripper. Men are always trying to get women to be like hookers. Men are always trying to get women, in terms of sex, men want women to be as sexually hungry and as sexually active and as sexually turned on and as sexy and as sexual as men. That's what men, but you see, we're going to be fighting a losing battle until the end of time because that's not what women are. But on the flip side, women are constantly trying to get us to become I love this whole analogy to birds, you know, we mate for life. And forget it. Now, I know there's plenty of women who are going to give me stories about their hubby being the most true blue cat that the world has ever seen. And I'm sure that he is. But you may be interested to know the statistic that, somewhere in the neighborhood of 70 to 80% of all marriages that last longer than 40 years, there's been infidelity. 70%. When you tell a man there's something wrong with you because you want to have sex and you go ahead and have sex with a lot of beautiful women, you're getting into a territory that the Russians used to explore, you know, where they put a guy in a nut house because he happens to have a political point of view that is contrary to the state think. Well, when you tell a man that he's got a sickness because he's being a man, friend, you better go back and get something other than a medical degree. I got a great idea. Why don't you grab a broom out of the closet and start mopping up the hall? Because you ain't a doctor. Yeah, well, I have sex addiction this and sex addiction that. All these jackasses that run sex addiction clinics, they're all cats that had sex addictions themselves. Basically, they were married, but they liked to have a lot of women around. So they thought they had had an addiction. And
they thought they had it.
Don't say it. And they had actually what they had was a woman who talked them into thinking they had a sex addiction because they didn't like being married to a man, I guess. 877-876 Phil, world famous Phil Henry Show. Don't say that.
You said that the guy had it.
Phil Henry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
Phil, Russia furious over adopted boys sent back from the United States. Russia has threatened to suspend all child adoptions by U.S. families Friday after a 7-year-old boy adopted by a woman from Tennessee was sent alone on a one-way flight back to Moscow with a note saying he was violent and had severe psychological problems. The boy was put on a plane by his adopted grandmother, Nancy Hansen of Shelbyville, Tennessee, who said, quote, he drew a picture of our house burning down, and he'll tell anybody that he's going to burn our house down with us in it. It's got to where you feared for your safety. It was terrible. Why is it I don't feel sorry for this woman at all? I mean, I'm not even close to feeling sorry for her. 7 years old, seven, put on a plane, sent back to Tennessee, or sent back to Russia. Which is probably, for that child, a way better place than Tennessee right about now. The cases are prompting outrage in Russia. Now, we got two things that are going on. Russia is probably a toilet bowl when it comes to raising children. In fact, you know, the reality of Russia is that they have domestic situations and domestic terrorism and a great many social ills that Russia had all through the years of the communist rule that they never dealt with. They never dealt with adequately. They didn't deal with alcoholism. They didn't deal with anything, mental illness, nothing. It was all a problem that had to do with needing to be re-educated in dialectical forms of Marxist-Leninism. And they felt that any and all problems could be solved if the comrade was re-educated along the lines of Marxist-Leninism. That's just the way that society was structured. Once that went away and it became more of a secular democracy like the United States, they had to, you know, reacquaint themselves with the social problems that they basically had ignored for almost 100 years. See, we look at Russia and France and Germany and Africa. We think these countries are pretty much like America, except maybe they don't have the same really good smelling bathrooms that we have. But other than that, well, I got news for you. We think that America has got some apologizing to do and that America has to bring itself up to some level that the rest of the world has reached. Anybody that believes that, anyone that thinks that, anyone that actually embraces that and takes to heart that that's true, I think you grew up locked in a closet. You must have. As we've often said on our show, America is an oasis in the middle of quite frankly, at times, a sea of sewage. So now you got Russia. And, of course, you remember the stories from Eastern Europe following the end of the communist empire, the fall of the Iron Curtain. We had Romanian children that were being adopted. We had orphanages that were overflowing with the children of the failed communist Soviet state. And Russia, a huge country that doesn't have near the number of people it probably should were it more prosperous. Russia right now is looking to, that's the really mentally diseased thing about all this. Russia is actually trying to increase its population. Meanwhile, it has children it can't even take care of. I don't know what the hell your problem is, Putin, but I know that nobody can tell you anything because you are God's gift, man, and a bag of freaking greasy pork rinds on top of it. And let's not forget that you chop wood with your shirt off. So you're just hot, dude. Well, I got news for you, Ace. you got to build a country filled with people. You can't even take care of a seven-year-old kid. So what happened? So we know that Russia's a big fat nothing. And, you know, big fat nothings have a tendency to cause problems, like China. That's another big fat phony baloney story over there. But hey, they got some spending green now, man. I mean, they could buy and sell our ass. And Russia the same way. If they ever get cranked up enough to get at least one of their industries in order, they want to be the number one builder of aircraft by 2020. They can do it. They can do it. I mean, they may still not have underarm deodorant, and they still may be rolling their own cigarettes over there, but, you know. But when it comes to these things like children and the family, you know, it's still an impoverished place. So we adopt kids. Now, what do? Well, we're Americans. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean we know how to raise children? One of the areas, and I've often said, you know, America's second to none when it comes to everything. Everything. But there are areas where I would say, you know, when we talk about second to none, we always are talking politically, economically. We're talking about industry. We talk about technology. We talk about manufacturing. What about mental health? What about mental health? All right. We're probably pretty healthy. But when it comes to raising kids, man, the jury's out on that one. And nobody is going to look me in the eye and tell me that we're anything special when it comes to raising children. Especially this generation, this boomer generation that we are finally going to be rid of. And I'm part of that generation. I'm very happy to tell you. I say this with all as much grace as I can. I will shuffle off this mortal coil and bid you a fond adieu. With a smile on my face, because believe me, you younger people, when we're finally gone, you're going to be way better off. You're going to have to undo all the narcissistic, self-indulgent, spoiled, rotten parent trap stuff that we've put into your heads in raising you to feel special, raising you to feel like you're so special. We would have done you far more good if we just told you the truth. You ain't all that special, man. Here's how you get special. You get out there and you kick a little bit of ass, and then you get special. Until then, you ain't all that special. I love you. Of course I love you. I'll always love you. But the world is the world. All we did is set you guys up to get your teeth knocked down your throat so you come back and live with us till you're 26. That's what we did for you. You went out into the world all special, and somebody hauled off and knocked your teeth down your throat and said, you ain't all that special to me, man. And you come back wounded, and you live in the garage till you're 26. It's not your fault. Here we got Daisy May in Shelbyville, Tennessee. She decides she's going to adopt a Russian kid. Well, guess what? It wasn't working out. I don't know what she thought she was getting. But she sent the boy back. So we're shuffling kids back and forth. Even when we adopt them, we send them on back on some kind of a steam freighter, because we can't handle American kids, man. What makes us think we're going to start raising Russian kids? And let me tell you one other thing here. This feel-good stuff about adopting, you know, these feel-good yuppies and boomers, white parents adopting black children. Because what? Because you want to test out your theory that there's no skin color, really, that colorblind is the way to go? Because that's what it is. 90% of these people, these whites, that adopt black children from Africa or impoverished parts of the world, they're testing their theory about colorblind out. And you know what? That child is the one that's going to be at the receiving end of all of your experimentations about being colorblind, and everything is just oh so marvelous in a family that loves itself. The kid's going to grow up. He's going to look at his skin color. He's going to be 15 years old. He's going to say, I'm black, you're white. What's the story? And what are you going to say? Well, you know, we love you. You know what? He's 15. He doesn't give a damn whether you love him or not. He's 15. He's pissed off and he wants to know. So he's going to want to know where his people are. You're going to put him on a tramp steamer, you know, with a knapsack, and send him on back to Africa so he can go visit his people. If you're smart, that's exactly what you'll do. And you'll wait around for about 3 months. And when he calls up and wants to come home, make sure that you've got the plane ticket ready, because that's what he's going to want to do. But get ready for it, because forget about all of this stuff that, you know, oh, well, we're just going to show him with our love how groovy it is, because it ain't going to happen. He's going to look at you and he's going to be pissed off and resentful. He doesn't know why he's in this family with whites. He wants to go see his own people, and that's what's going to happen. And the reason why I'm bringing all of this stuff up, folks, is we're moving past a very tragic period in the history of child rearing in America. We're moving through the era that the boomers were in charge, because I don't think there's been a generation that's butchered it more than these jackasses, than these simple-minded clowns called baby boomers, who, you know, their influence is seen everywhere. And I'm not knocking the Tea Party people. I think the Tea Party people have got some, you know, legitimate concerns. But I also see in the Tea Party people the baby boomers. They want it now. They want it right away. They want it their way. They don't want to talk about it. Me, 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 I. They think they got it figured out. Everybody else is full of crap. It's all about them. It ain't about anybody else. It's not about compromise, not about anything, man. It's just the boomer approach, you know. God almighty, if you really want to know the dynamic behind politics in America these days, just take a look at all of these spoiled, rotten baby boomers, all 75 million of us, who, like I said, with any luck, man, will all be dead soon. From their child rearing to their child adoption to their influence in politics, they have been confusing. And again, this is a generation that never had to sacrifice a damn thing, never had to work for a damn thing, never really had to do anything other than just sit on their dead ass with their good looks and wait for the whole thing to get dropped in their lap, which is exactly what happened. We got it dropped in our lap, and guess what we did? We dropped it further on our lap, down to the floor. We dropped it and broke it. So the bottom line on all this idea of adopting children from Russia, how's about we figure out what we're going to do with kids right here? That's a really good start. This thing about, man, you know, the altruism of the boomers and the ex-hippies, and we're going to go out and we're going to love on the world, man. We need a dose of reality worse than anything, any other time in the history of this country. God almighty, do we need a dose of reality. And you thought we would have awakened after 9/11. You thought, well, that's a jolt. That's 3,000 people dead, two huge buildings knocked down. That's going to get everybody together. That's going to toughen people up. No, we got even whinier. We got even bitchier, and we retreated even further into that horse dung about let's love on everyone and be as groovy as we can be, because then the world is going to think, well, you know what I'm saying? No, man, I don't know what you're saying. What are you talking about? Oh, I get it. Are you like Bush? You're into Bush. Yes, I am into Bush, but not the kind you're thinking of. And, how sexist. Well, okay, but you opened the door for that one. No, I'm into reality. Reality, see what's around me here? What's here? Yeah. Well, I believe that a guy that did that, I want to go and I'm going to kill him. Oh, no, man. America has been, we need now to back off and to kiss and hug and give just a little bit of a hip hunch to the world. And you know what, man? I swear to God, not for nothing, but if I had a gun, oh, you'd kill me? No, I'd kill myself just so I don't have to stand here listening to you. And the culmination of all of this horse manure, the culmination of all of this silliness is what? We elected President Obama, and there's some stupid clowns that thought that once he got elected, the whole world would give us a big, fat, wet French kiss. Guess what? Uh-uh. No-oh. That's it, man. I mean, there's no other way. Take a look at it. The Iraq War, it's been won. You were wrong. Take a look at it. President Obama, good guy, got elected. The world still hates our guts. Take a look at it. The healthcare thing, it's a good idea. But you know what? It ain't all going to get rolled out all at once, man, the way we all wanted it to get rolled out all at once on. We're going to have to wait around, compromise. We're going to have to just, you know, you're going to have to just shut up and sit tight and work at it. Work. You know what that is, don't you? I mean, work for something other than yourself. Guns. Gitmo. anti-terror measures, military, all good, all good. Cops, good. Firefighters, good. Military, good. Just give it up. Bernadette Dorn, William Ayers, asswipes. Bernadette Dorn thought the Tate LaBianca murders was groovy. She thought sticking a fork in Sharon Tate was groovy. These are scum. Doesn't necessarily mean Obama's a bad guy. I get it. The cat's got to go out and earn a living. He's got to go out and raise money where he's got to raise money, okay? Understand, if you're an Obama supporter, you're going to have to take a look, and I am, look at the other realities besides the fact that he's a great communicator, a charming guy, he means well, he's very smart. I think he can be a great president. I really honestly do. But let's just divorce ourselves from these other delusions. And quit adopting Russian kids.
I was going to say that.
We don't need any more of them over here, man. We don't need any more hockey players. 877-876-PHIL. Palin and Obama, by the way, sparred over the U.S. nuke policy. If there's only one person who I can't... If there's anybody that I can't stand listening to more than the aforementioned William Ayers, Bernadette Dorn, or any of the others, it's Sarah Palin. And the Dr. Green Thumb report still to come. Phil Hendry Show. Our website, philhendryshow.com. Coming up, we have Doug Danger from the Orange County Courier to talk with us about Charlie Sheen. Our website, philhendryshow.com, with our downloadable shows. Every day following the show, you can go over to our website and listen to... Test 1, 2, 3. What is that? It's like wind. It's a wind tunnel, bud.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to look and see.
Look and see where. Anyway, go to our website, philhendryshow.com, and you'll be able to listen to downloads of each and every show there after the show airs. And also our five-day video archive is there, and we're streaming in live video right now at philhendryshow.com. All right, Palin and Obama spar from a distance over the nuke policy. This is only interesting to me from the standpoint of some of this audio. No offense, but Sarah Palin does not come across sounding at her best here. And the TV show that she's doing for Fox, by the way, it sucks. No offense, Fox, seriously. I understand you want to try things, and that's good. She stinks. I mean, she's lousy. Who cares about her great American stories? You know, what is that about, man? Can't you get somebody better than that to do a show like... She's just doing these profiles of these people who do nice things, but, I mean, can't you get just any old host to do something like that? Shouldn't she be on there doing like a political show like Glenn does, you know, walking in front of a chalkboard, explaining how life goes, doing all this? I mean, what are you doing, Fox? Are you turning her into the national chick where she's doing light and fluffy? Because that's what that is. Don't give me this bull crap about how it's a meaningful job. She's doing light and fluffy. Get her in front of a chalkboard and she can do the Albert Einstein thing, man. Put her in a cape. That'll really work. Anyway, Obama and Sarah Palin, of all people. The president had to, you know, debate. I guess he's going to have to take on all comers, if you'll pardon the expression. He's debating. Some people would like to see Sarah Palin run for president. None of them actually, you know, went to school. Anyway, President Obama and Republican Sarah Palin sparred from a distance over nuclear policy, with each questioning the other's experience on the issue in a potential preview of the 2012 White House race. Well, I think one thing can be said, that Obama has more experience than Palin now, because he's been walking around as president for a year. He's talked to world leaders. He's got the dude with the suitcase and the handcuff. He's got the code. He's been briefed on how to tell these guys, go ahead and arm the missiles. So I think he knows a little bit more about it from that standpoint than Sarah Palin. He was in Prague to sign a nuclear reduction treaty with Russia, countered by deriding the former Alaska governor who resigned midway through her first term as not much of an expert on nuclear issues. ABC News' George Stephanopoulos asked President Obama about his stance on using nukes.
Sarah Palin, taking aim at your decision to restrict use of nuclear weapons, your pledge not to strike nations, non-nuclear nations, who abide by the non-proliferation treaty. Here's what she said. She said, it's unbelievable. No other administration would do it. And then she likened it to kids on a playground. She said, you're like a kid who says, punch me in the face, and I'm not going to retaliate.
Yeah.
Your response?
I really have no response to that. Last I checked, Sarah Palin's not much of an expert on nuclear issues.
But the strain of criticism has been out there among other Republicans as well. They think you're restricting use of nuclear weapons too much.
And what I would say to them is that if the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff are comfortable with it, I'm probably going to take my advice from them.
All right, here's a speech today. Sarah Palin hits back at Obama.
Now, the president.
Well, let's see this right away, man. Anyway.
Now.
Well, I know it sounds like a cheap shot, right? But hey, it's not like, you see, this goes, it goes equally for both sides. Goes equally for both sides. And I hear the cheap shots flying from people about Obama and all of this. And, you know, I'm going to say this until the day I die. If I sound like some kind of a liberal, it's because people aren't listening good enough, man. We'll be back next hour with Doug Danger, Phil Henry Show.
Now.
Yeah. No, later. Not now.
Now.
No, later.
Now.
Later.
Phil Henry.
Now.